Good evening and welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on African News Tonight.
The UN Refugee Agency is appealing to countries worldwide to provide homes for nearly 500,000 of the most vulnerable Syrian refugees. The UNHCR is urging representatives of more than 90 countries attending a ministerial-level conference to grant refuge to the Syrians through resettlement and other humanitarian programs.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, a young Nigerian girl who says she is one of hundreds kidnapped in Chibok nearly 2 years ago apparently is not who she claims to be. Tunisia's peaceful transition to democracy is threatened by terrorism from neighboring Libya. And food insecurity worsens in Zimbabwe as some sell off their livestock. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the Associated Press reports that a young Nigerian girl who says that she is one of hundreds kidnapped in Chibok nearly 2 years ago is not who she claims to be. A Nigerian official says the girl is actually from a nearby community. The child, described as about 10 years old, was arrested Friday in Cameroon with explosives strapped to her body. The Nigerian militant group Boko Haram has been using women and girls as suicide bombers. Boko Haram abducted 276 Chibok schoolgirls in April 2014. Some escaped, but 219 remain missing. The chairman of the Chibok Parents Association, Yabuku Nkeki, says he is still waiting for the government to bring him to Cameroon to meet with the girl. His 14-year-old niece was among those taken. And more than 2 million Nigerians have been displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency in the northwest of the country. Many who once sought refuge in neighboring communities are moving into Nigerian government camps for the internally displaced. One camp in Borno State now houses as many as 300,000 civilians. From Kano, reporter Abubakar Haruna Galanchi talked with VOA's David Arnold about difficult conditions in the camp and about a woman he met who just gave birth to a baby girl in the camp.
The camp looked like a war zone, because I can tell you there are so many women and even small children. Most of those small children, their parents and their relatives, they have been killed. They don't know anybody. So somebody or among the NEMA officials or other aid organizations, they will come and pick it so that they will manage it with in a classroom. Or you can find that an old woman, she used to take care of so many children, like 10, 15, up to 20.
Tell me about this young woman whose family is now dead and who just delivered a baby.
She told me that she's from Dalori town, that is in Borno State, Maiduguri Central. And she told me that my husband, 1 year and 2 months, my husband was slaughtered in front of my eyes by Boko Haram. And when she's telling me that, she broke down with tears. So she's telling me that I have nowhere else to go. So I would rather decide to stay here in the camp. Maybe after government will decide to give us something to do or somewhere else to go. But for now, she can tell me that all my relatives, my husband, my friends, and my family members have been killed by Boko Haram.
What do you think will be the future for this young woman and her baby?
From what I learned from these people, that the government must do a hectic work so as to control the minds of those people. Because I can tell you that from what this woman told me, that I don't think someone will easily forget the way someone killed your husband. So that our government used to do something tangible for these people so as to try to erase that memory from their minds, so that one day they will not be a threat to the northern, eastern part of the country, as well as Nigeria in general.
And this baby that was born, what is the baby's name?
She told me that the name of the baby is Fatima. That is, Borno people used to call Fatima with Palmata, but all of them is the same.
What is your impression about the manner in which the government has been operating this camp?
The government is trying a little because, as you have said, and even from the statistics, almost 2.something million are displaced. I think the government needs to do more so that erase that terrible memory in the minds of those people, so that one day these people, either a woman or a young children, even the babies, in the near future, they will not be a threat to the northern part of the country as well as Nigeria.
That was reporter Abubakar Haruna Galadanchi from Kano. He spoke with VOA's David Arnold. Well, this week, only small numbers of migrants and refugees have arrived on Greek islands. It was assumed that the new deal between the EU and Turkey was responsible. The deal calls for new arrivals to be sent back to Turkey for registration. For every Syrian returned to Turkey, another will be resettled in Europe. However, there was a spike in new arrivals today. The Associated Press reports hundreds of people landed on four Greek islands, including Lesbos, which had been a main destination point. Also, the French news agency reports that 152 migrants were rescued today off the coast of Libya. Coast Guard vessels intercepted a vessel about to sink early this morning. Later, 32 others were rescued in another incident on the Mediterranean. This week, AP reports the Libyan Coast Guard rescued 750 migrants, while 3,000 others were rescued by mostly Italian ships. And in northeastern Paris today, police evacuated several hundred migrants who built a makeshift camp near a train station. Authorities say the evacuation was peaceful, and those in the camp will be relocated. The UN Refugee Agency is appealing to countries worldwide to provide homes for nearly 500,000 of the most vulnerable Syrian refugees. The UNHCR is urging representatives of more than 90 countries attending a ministerial-level conference to grant refuge to the Syrians through resettlement and other humanitarian programs. Lisa Schlein reports from the UNHCR conference in Geneva.
Countries neighboring Syria are bearing the brunt of the Syrian refugee crisis. They are hosting 4.8 million refugees. The UN Refugee Agency says other nations must shoulder some of the burden. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says his agency aims to resettle one-tenth, or about 480,000 of the refugees, over the next 3 years. He acknowledges it will not be easy, especially in light of the growing resistance by nations in Europe and elsewhere to welcome people fleeing conflict and persecution. He says large numbers of desperate Syrians are undertaking dangerous journeys across the Mediterranean Sea in search of refuge in Europe. He indicates the recent EU-Turkey resettlement agreement is unlikely to resolve the Syrian refugee crisis.
Our point to both Turkey and the European Union, and in fact to the international community, is that legal pathways for admission are a very powerful alternative to dangerous journeys, especially for vulnerable people. So the sooner those are implemented, the more people will be discouraged from resorting to boats and other means of movement.
Besides resettlement, the UNHCR offers other legal pathways for countries to consider. These include academic scholarships, humanitarian visas, accelerated and easier family reunification programs, and medical treatment. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon lends his voice to the UNHCR's appeal for countries to resettle Syrian refugees. He says nations benefit from refugees who bring valuable new skills and make many positive economic contributions to their societies.
Attempts to demonize people fleeing conflict and persecution are not only demeaning, offensive, and counterproductive, they are factually wrong. And measures to control the entry of refugees must safeguard the human rights and dignity of each individual person.
The Syrian refugee crisis is the world's largest since World War II. The UNHCR reports countries have offered more than 179,000 resettlement places for Syrian refugees since 2013. It says it hopes more pledges will be forthcoming during the conference. It adds, this is a global crisis that needs a global response. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
15 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. A peaceful transition to democracy in Tunisia proved to be a rare success story of the Arab Spring. However, the young democracy is threatened by terrorism spilling over its border from Libya. Tunisian ambassador to the U.S., Faisal Koya, talked about the security risk facing his country and efforts to counter them. Senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi has the story.
Tunisia was fortunate to have pragmatic politicians who preferred compromise over confrontation. The Islamist political party in Nahda, who won the first elections after the 2011 revolution, voluntarily handed over power to a technocrat government. A strong civil society in Tunisia also helped with the peaceful transition toward democracy. But despite the success, Ambassador Koweya says his country still faces serious threats and challenges.
We are facing so many challenges internally because of the terrorist attacks on Tunisia. Second, because of the many problems we are facing and which represents the inheritance of the former regimes and especially of 23 years of authoritarian regime, such as poverty, unemployment, and disparities and a huge gap between the coastal lands and cities and the inland.
The political and security vacuum in neighboring Libya has become a major concern for Tunisia because it has allowed Libya to become a breeding ground for terrorists. Following repeated attacks last year, tourism, one of Tunisia's major industries, dropped by nearly 50%. Tunisia recently hosted a conference of neighboring countries to discuss the best ways to counter the security threat from Libya. Ambassador Koweya summarizes the outcome.
The solution for this crisis in Libya is to install the new government. And we should create a military forces in Libya that are Republican, that obey to the government, not to militias. Of course, by excluding those who are involved in terrorism. The other element is to gather the guns that are circulating in Libya. We are talking about 30 million weapons.
Nevertheless, Tunisia opposes a unilateral Western military intervention to counter the expansion of the Islamic State fighters in Libya.
Our official position is clear. Any foreign intervention in Libya is not accepted by Tunisia. The only ones who can decide for any foreign intervention are the Libyans. Unless a government, a legal government, is installed in Libya and the Libyan government decides to allow any foreign intervention.
However, UN-sponsored efforts to install a unity government have failed so far to allow the Libyan prime minister to fly from Tunisia to Tripoli. Libya's UN-backed unity government has accused authorities in Tripoli of closing down the capital's airspace to prevent it from traveling from Tunisia to start work. A security source said that an armed group had closed the airspace to block a flight intended to bring in the unity government's prime minister, Faiz Sarraj. According to a recent report by the Soufan Group, a security consulting firm, up to 7,000 Tunisians have joined ISIS in Syria and Iraq. The Tunisian ambassador describes that as an exaggeration. He says his country is well prepared to prevent returning Tunisian fighters from becoming an added security threat.
Our forces are there, and we are doing our best to protect the borders, and we will not allow terrorists to get into Tunisia without being arrested and investigated. And for those who are really implicated in terrorism, they should be punished.
Ambassador Koweya praises U.S. support for Tunisia especially in equipping and training forces to counter security threats and securing Tunisian borders. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Mohammed. In related news, there's late word today that Fayez Sarraj, the head of the UN brokered Libyan government, and six deputies of the Presidential Council arrived by boat today from Tunisia. However, the foreign minister of the Islamist rival government said their arrival was unacceptable. The Associated Press says as a result, they remain at a naval base. Tunisia is getting some economic help from the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and the International Labor Organization. The World Bank reportedly plans to provide up to $1 billion in aid annually. The announcement followed a meeting that included World Bank President Jim Jong Kim, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, and Tunisian officials. Severe ongoing drought in southern Africa has already left 14 million people without enough to eat, according to the UN World Food Programme, and the number of food insecure people is expected to grow in the coming months. Sebastian Mofu reports from the most affected districts in the southeast of the country.
Here at Chachacha village in southeast Zimbabwe, men force their cattle to get into a truck to go to a market. Drought brought by particularly severe El Nino weather patterns has left millions across Zimbabwe and southern Africa without enough to eat. The UN Food Programme says the current rain season has been the driest in 35 years. Johannes Jivongoze says he's selling his cattle because he cannot afford to feed them. Low rainfall has reduced grazing land. He says we've already used up all of last year's harvest, so we have resorted to selling our livestock to get money to buy food. He says jobs here are hard to come by, and we are competing with lots of people coming over from Mozambique seeking work. This year's rains have come, but it is too late. He says what he had planted already dried up. For me to plant anything new now, he says, I don't think that's a workable solution. The capital, Harare, is about 600 kilometers away. Locals say government assistance has been slow to arrive. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization has been supplying herders in Chipinge District with feed at reduced prices to help them fatten their cattle. Some farmers in Chipinge are busy planting, although the Zimbabwe Meteorological Services Department announced last week that this already shortened season will end in mid-April. Taringana Makiwa is with the state-owned Agricultural Extension Service, which offers advice to Zimbabweans on farming.
We rather encourage farmers to go for the small grains, especially the finger millet, pure millet, and the sorghum. Why? Because they're a bit resistant, they're a bit tolerant in terms of drought. Most of our farmers, they used to go for the maize crop. In terms of cultivation, it's easy compared to the small grains. But at the end of the day, in terms of yield, we really reap nothing. So the small grains, they're a bit drought tolerant. So at least farmers will get something out of it.
But Zimbabweans continue to prefer maize. It is used to make a popular thick porridge called sadza, made of cornmeal and served with relish. Most households eat sadza twice a day at lunch and dinner. The price of cornmeal has already risen in local markets due to shortages. The government says it needs $1.6 billion in international assistance to import grain and provide other relief, an estimate international aid agencies have judged too high. The United Nations says it has raised about $80 million for food assistance to Zimbabwe. China also donated $24.6 million worth of rice to Zimbabwe in March. The people of Chipinge hope help will come fast. Selling off their animals may be a short-term solution, but it only makes them more vulnerable for the year to come. Sebastian Mofu, VOA News, Chipinge, Zimbabwe.
Despite some lingering cases and occasional flare-ups, the World Health Organization has declared the Ebola situation in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone no longer constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. WHO Director General Dr. Margaret Chan made the announcement yesterday in Geneva on the recommendation of the WHO Emergency Committee.
Although the response to a cluster of new Ebola cases and deaths is being reported in Guinea, that flare-up currently involves a single chain of transmission. It is the committee's view that the countries have the capacities and capabilities to manage such flares. Today, nearly 1,000 contacts related to this flare have been identified, of whom 142 are considered at high risk of exposure. In making its assessment, the committee reviewed data of this new cluster of cases, together with responses to earlier Ebola flare-ups that occur after the original chains of transmission were interrupted in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. The response to each and every one of these flares was immediately managed and very effectively contained. Chains of transmission were tracked, hundreds of contacts were traced and monitored, and the small clusters of cases were rapidly contained.
Chan says the Ebola response capacity of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone is now strong.
The three countries now have the world's largest pool of experts in responding to Ebola. WHO anticipated further flare-ups. We have kept hundreds of our own experienced staff in the three countries, ready to contribute to the kind of emergency response needed to quickly interrupt transmission chains. Our tools are sharper. For the first time in any Ebola outbreak, response teams have access to vaccination as a powerful containment tool. In addition, with the number of cases now much smaller, our laboratory partners are able to sequence viruses from individual patients. Sequence data on individual viruses back up the epidemiological detective work needed to define the source of transmission chains with great precision.
But Dr. Chan warns that sexual transmission of the Ebola virus can occur more than a year after full recovery of a male patient. She says a high level of vigilance must be maintained. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. And tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. We will talk about the empowerment of women. Is it a myth or reality? Tune in to Straight Talk Africa, Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.